Our study continues in the 17th chapter of 1 Samuel. David has just gone into the camp where the army of Israel is arrayed against the army of the Philistines to bring some provisions to his three older brothers. And there he sees Goliath make his great challenge against the army of the Israelites, challenging any man to come forth and fight with him. And he sees the great fear that Israel has of this man. And in verse 25, he learns about the great promise that Saul has made to anyone that is able to defy Goliath. Verse 25 says, "Have you seen this man that is come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel." So some great promises to the one who could overcome Goliath. He would not only make him rich, give him great riches, and also offer to give him his daughter, but he would make his father's house free in Israel. That is, he'd no longer have to pay tax and custom. He would be free from those duties that the average household would have to pay to the kingdom. So in verse 26, "And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" So David is talking about this situation, and he's asking some more questions about it. He's getting more information about just what is going to be the reward and the result to the person that should overcome this Goliath. And then he also shows his displeasure, his contempt for the thing that Goliath is doing. He says, "For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" In David's mind, this really is something that should not be. Here's a conflict. Here's something that needs to be resolved. Here's a person that is an uncircumcised Philistine. He's not a follower of the living God. He's not a worshiper of the true God. Doesn't even believe in the true God. He hasn't conformed to the law of God. And so who is he that he should defy the armies of the living God? We have armies here that are backed by the living God. They're the armies of the living God. And should this one man who is not a godly person at all be able to defy them? So David is really cutting him down to size when it comes to his true stature before God. Sure, the man was a giant. He had all kinds of physical prowess. But when it comes to the fact that he is withstanding God and the armies of God, he really is not that much. So David said, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And the people answered him after this manner, saying, "So shall it be done to the man that killeth him." So they again repeat to David the great promise that Saul has made. He's going to be made rich, he's going to be given the king's daughter, and his family will be made free in Israel. Not only would the one who can defy and overcome Goliath be doing this, the nation a service, be giving a very great impetus to the army and helping them to overcome the Philistines, but then he also would be amply rewarded for his trouble. And in verse 28, Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David. Now here we're going to see where envy comes into play. The envy of an older brother to the younger brother. As a matter of fact, he's the oldest of the eight, and David is the youngest of the eight. And there had probably been a pattern established in the past where Eliab had been in a situation to run David down. He'd no doubt used his position as the oldest brother and David's position as the youngest brother to run over him in a lot of things. So here's David talking and asking about this Goliath, the thing that has been threatening the whole army now for some 40 days. And David had just come into the picture and is learning about it anew for the first time. And the anger of Eliab is kindled. We see here is envy. A person that is not wanting David to get any more glory, any more fame or honor. He's wanting David to be out of the picture entirely. He knows what his past accomplishments have been in the court of Saul, and now he wants David to be home with the sheep and let him in this army and in this battle with the Philistines be in the position to get the more glory. And so we see David then is receiving the brunt of envy, just as men like Jacob and Joseph received from their older brothers. So Eliab begins to try to degrade David. And it begins by saying, "Why camest thou down hither?" Implying very strongly that David doesn't have any business here. This army, this business of fighting, this business of defending Israel is something that's beyond David's caliber, and that David is just not qualified to even be there. And of course, we know that David had a good reason for being there. He came bringing provisions to Eliab and his other two brothers. He was sent there by his father. He didn't come on his own. And he further says, "With whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness?" Implying that David was remiss in his duties at home, that David had not properly taken care of the responsibility toward those few sheep that he was shepherd over. And we know that he did leave them in good hands when he left. He'd made all the provisions necessary to be able to come and take this trip. And so Eliab further says, "I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart." So he's accusing David of false things, accusing David of having pride, of having bad thoughts, the naughtiness of thine heart. And he further says, "For thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle." You just come down to be on a kind of a vacation. You've come down to observe the battle. You want to watch us fight. And you don't even have the integrity to take care of your home duties. You don't have any business here. So it really shows a lot of deep-seated resentment here against David. He is showing envy and jealousy, and this can be a much greater foe sometimes than anything else. Here this army of Israel is confronted with a common foe. They have their hands full, or more than full, in the Philistines, and we find a brother attacking another brother. And then this is something that could lead to the downfall of Israel. And we must be most careful that we today in the church not allow ourselves to have petty differences, to have envying and jealousy and strife that will interfere with our ability to fight against the common enemies of the church. And had this brother been victorious in his downgrading of David, had he been allowed to overcome and prevailed and send David away from the fight, things might have been very muchly different, might have been much worse for Israel. And we see that David is able to hold his temper. David is able to control himself here. He could have come back with a vicious retort, showing that all the things that his brother said were false and his brother had some ill motives. But David is able to control himself here, and perhaps this victory that he has over his own self and being able to exercise self-control in response to what his brother did is as great a victory for David as the one that he later has over the giant Goliath. So in verse 29, David said, "What have I now done? I haven't done anything that's bad. Just examine my actions. What have I done? You're talking for no good reason. You're accusing me of things that you don't have a reason to accuse me of, for I haven't done anything that's wrong. What have I now done? Is there not a cause? I came for a good purpose. There's a cause for my being here. Our Father sent me here to provide things for you. I've come for a good purpose. There's a cause for my being here." And so he just simply lets his brother know that his charges are false, they are baseless or groundless, and that he is here for a good reason. He is not shirking any duty, but he's simply doing the things that his father instructed him to do. Verse 30, "And he turned from him toward another." So he didn't stand there and continually argue and wrangle with his brother. He gave him a simple, straightforward, truthful answer. And then he turned from them toward another and spake after the same manner, and the people answered him again after the former manner. So David continued to inquire about this Goliath. What is the true situation here? What is the offer made by the king? Just what's it going to take to be able to overcome this Goliath? What is the consequences if someone attack him and failed? He's examining the situation from every angle now, and he does not let his brother deter him from this vast interest that he has in being able to overcome Goliath. So here's our situation. In verse 11, "When Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid." So all of the army was afraid of this Philistine. However, we have David asking all these questions. And David is also talking in a very brave manner. For in verse 26 he says, "For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And David's asking a lot of questions about this So the matter then comes to Saul. Verse 31, and when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. So now Saul learns that David is in the camp. He also learns what David is saying. He seems to be the one man in the whole camp that is willing to defy this Philistine. The one man who is willing to stand up and to at least speak his mind about what he thinks about this Philistine, and do it in such a manner as to not exhibit fear and utter dismay because this giant is standing before the army. So verse 32, and David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. So he just flatly makes the statement to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Now he doesn't specifically tell Saul not to let his heart fail, because this might seem to be an affront to the great king. But he says, let no man's heart fail. That would include the king or any other person who might feel that he just didn't have a chance against this giant. So we see then David has courage, and he also has conviction. He fully believes that God is going to be with this Israelite army. He believes God is going to be with the one that will go out and fight this giant. And so he states his convictions very flatly. He's not timorous or afraid. He doesn't hesitate. He doesn't put a lot of ifs or buts or conditions about it. Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. He simply makes the offer himself. I will go. Thy servant will go. I'll fight with this Philistine. And he doesn't say it in such a way as to appear that he is going to do it for his own benefit. He's going to do it because he is better than anybody else. But he speaks of himself as being a servant. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. And so Saul starts to tell David how that he's not qualified, how that he shouldn't even think about doing this thing, because there's such a vast difference between him and this giant. He says, you're just a youth. You haven't had any experience with warfare. You really don't know that much about the ways of the world, certainly the fighting people. And here this man is he's a man of war, and he's been so from his youth. He's been trained from a young man to be a man of war. He's a professional soldier. He's a champion of the camp over there. He is someone that is undefeated in battle and in warfare. And in this particular case, it would be hand-to-hand combat. And so he paints the picture of gloom to David by showing that David is just simply not qualified to meet this giant. And David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. Now David is going to show Saul that he does have some qualification, that he's not just someone who knows nothing about conflict or combat or how to defend himself or how to even be aggressive if necessary. And he shows that while he kept his sheep, he encountered some grave danger. There came a lion and a bear. Now this seems to be two different occasions that David encountered these dangers. One was a lion, one was a bear, and as we all know, that a person that's face to face with either one of these animals, especially when the animal's hungry and the animal's trying to take something that you don't want it to have, that this can be a very dangerous situation. A lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he rose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. So here David, in hand-to-hand combat, where the lion has killed him. And also the same thing has happened in the case of the bear. For it says in verse 36, thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. So David says, this giant, because he is defying the armies of the living God, he's going to be no better than one of these beasts. One of these beasts has come to take one of my father's lambs, and I defended those lambs. I slew those beasts, and this Philistine will be no better than one of them. He's defying the armies of the living God. Now that's a much worse affront to defy the armies of the living God than to defy a lamb of my father's flock. But David shows that he was a very diligent servant when he was a shepherd, that he did mind the flock, and he did risk his life for the salvation of a lamb out of that flock. And it shows then that he is going to be well qualified to be the king as he leads the people, the flock of God. And it also shows that he is a very fitting type of Christ, Christ who also holds the little lambs to his bosom and who is the great shepherd of the flock. In verse 36, "Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God." So it compares this giant to a beast, like the lion and like the bear. Certainly they are something to be afraid of. They are something to take notice of because they are dangerous. But nevertheless, when it comes up to fighting against the things of God, when it comes to protecting the things that belong to God, then he is no better than the lion or the bear. And this reminds us of the statement made by Peter in 2 Peter, the second chapter, verse 12, where he's speaking of the ungodly people. He says, "But these, as natural brute beasts, made to be taken and destroyed, speak evil of the things that they understand not, and shall utterly perish in their own corruption." And so, just as Peter compares those false teachers to brute beasts, made to be taken and destroyed, even so here David is comparing this giant of the Philistines to the lion and the bear that he had slain because he has defied the armies of the living God. When we place ourselves outside of the realm of God, when we find ourselves fighting against the things of God, then we have put ourselves into the same position as a brute beast. We put ourselves in the same position as a lion attacking the shepherd, as a bear attacking the shepherd. And then our defeat, our utter destruction, would simply be doing the forces of good a favor. Verse 37, "David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of the Philistine." Now David knew that it was virtually impossible for him to have conquered this bear and this lion. He wasn't a man of that much strength and that much prowess actually, but because God was with him, then he was able to do it. And so he says it was the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the bear and the lion, and he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. Just as God saved me on those occasions, just as God gave me the victory against those ferocious beasts of the field, even so, he's going to save me whenever I encounter this Philistine. The Lord shall deliver me out of the hand of the Philistine. And this seems to be a very similar thought that the Apostle Paul had when he made a statement in 2 Timothy 4, verses 17 and 18. And I'd like to read that, where Paul says, "Notwithstanding, the Lord stood with me and strengthened me, that by me the preaching might be fully known, and that all the Gentiles might hear. And I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion. And the Lord shall deliver me from every evil work, and will preserve me unto his heavenly kingdom, to whom be glory forever and ever. Amen." So we see just as David had this frame of mind of being delivered from the Philistine, even so Paul had the frame of mind of being delivered from every evil work and being preserved unto the heavenly kingdom of the Lord. And so we today can have a very similar feeling ourselves. We can feel that we're going to be delivered from the mouth of the lion, that we're going to be delivered from whatever evil work may come upon us if we remain faithful, if we turn to God and depend upon God, just as David did. "And Saul said unto David, Go, and the Lord be with thee. And Saul armed David with his armor, and put a helmet of brass upon his head. Also he armed him with a coat of mail." So as soon as Saul gives him permission to go, then he begins to put the armor on him. He feels that he must be armed as any other soldier would be. He's still looking to the temporal thing, still looking to man's devices to be able to bring David through this great crisis and to give him the victory over this giant. And so we have to feel that he gave David the very best of the armor. It wasn't probably Saul's personal armor because Saul's stature was so much different from David's. But he armed him with his armor, put the helmet and the coat of mail on him, Verse 39 says, "And David girded his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go." So he added the sword onto this armor, and he was all ready to go, for he had not proved it. Now, this phrase, "he had not proved it," means that he hadn't tested this armor. He hadn't been trained in it. He didn't properly know how to use it. And so this was a new experience for him, to have armor strapped on. He wasn't used to fighting with armor. When he fought the bear and the lamb, it was without the benefit of this armor. And so if he should go out with an untested and untried armor on, then this might encumber him. It might hold him back and keep him from being able to use his natural ability in the battle against the giant. And David said unto Saul, "I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them." So he realized that he wasn't experienced in the use of this armor, in the use of this equipment, even though it was very sophisticated and very well-used type of equipment. David himself was not used to it. He was unskilled in it. He hadn't proved them, and David put them off from him. So we see that David used the equipment that he knew the best, and it wasn't this armor. Yeah, even though it was very good, even though it was something that was well recognized as something to be used, David knew that this would hold him back. He hadn't been trained and skilled in it. And so it is with us today. Anything that we try to do in the way of a job or any position we try to hold, if we haven't been properly trained for it, if we haven't been skilled in it, if we haven't been proved in the use of it, then we better be very cautious, because we may find that it's going to be too much for us. It may be a hindrance for us. It may be something that's not what we are cut out for or cut out to do, and so we're better off to use the wisdom that David did and to put it off because it hadn't been proven. So now we see the scene is set for the battle. David is ready to go out. He's gotten the permission of Saul, and he is well equipped with the armor of God. He has the faith that's needed. He has the determination, and he believes that he's going to be able to be successful. So now the scene is set for David to meet this great giant, Goliath. Well, our time has expired at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.